Welcome to Idle Chatter, brought to you by the Machinery Digest, where steel and soil meet. A weekly podcast by a New Jersey farmer to all farmers and ranchers across this great nation. And yes, there are farms in New Jersey. Regardless of the crop you grow or the livestock you raise, we all have one thing in common. Agriculture runs on passion, sweat, tears, and machinery. And that is why the Machinery Digest exists. A no-nonsense, grease-under-your-fingernails educational website. It was created to provide a transfer of knowledge so that you can maintain, service, and most importantly, understand today's complex farm equipment. My name is Ray Bohax, and I farm too. It is time now to get under the sheet metal. Hello and welcome to Idle Chatter from the Farm Machinery Digest. I am Ray Bohax, your one and only host, and I want to thank you for listening to my show today. And I hope that everything is going well on your operation, and every week that is my sincerest desire. And I know that, like everybody in life, we have ups and downs, good days, bad days, but hopefully, God willing, that the good days outweigh the bad days, and that your crops or your livestock, whatever part of agriculture you're in, maybe you have a vineyard. I know we have listeners with vineyards. We have rice farmers. We have some horticulture guys. We also have some orchardmen, vegetable growers, dairymen, cattlemen, poultry producers, hog producers. So hopefully everything is going well, or as best as it can be for you today and in the future. So July is flying by. It is the second week into the, I guess, more than into the second week of July, and we're coming up on the wonderful anniversary of the United States putting a man on the moon. So that is was a wonderful, wonderful accomplishment, and it is something I think that as Americans, we really need to look back retrospectively and honor what an accomplishment that was, not only to get them there, but to get them home. And to communicate back to the earth, or as I say, to the United States, to the earth, and to have it on TV. We had an old black and white TV, and I remember my mother, my father, my sister, and my grandmother were all glued to that TV set, and my father was playing with the rabbit ears and with everything to try to get it to come in clearly. But they were great, great times filled with pride and honor, and there is no reason for us not to carry that on today. And in deference to the moonwalk back in 1969, today's show is going to be not about space travel, but today's show is going to be something that I want to represent to the audience, and that is when specifications are not enough, that they only need to be the starting point. And so many times that we look just at a specification for a piece of machinery, for an engine, for equipment, and we say we have it set to the exact specification. And sometimes that's great. It should be at that. But other times it should not be. And why I'm connecting that with the moonwalk and us, America, going to the moon back 50 years ago, is that if those guys just looked at the specification and didn't think out of the box, that mission would probably never be accomplished. So you have to tune it up along the way. And that's what we're going to discuss. So today it's going to be a show about a mindset, about a thought process of the what we need to do when we're working on machinery. But also, I want to interject another aspect in it. So it's almost going to be like a double header today, or they used to have in the movies, they weren't called double headers, a double feature, right? When we had a movie theater in town that had dollar movies, then they had a double feature, so you'd pay $2 and you get to see both movies. So it was quite nice, especially because it was air conditioned, and we really didn't have air conditioning. So on a summer, hot summer evening, that was quite nice to go see a double feature. But the other part that I want to talk about today is how in agriculture, and my concern is agriculture, but this is obviously happening in all aspects of life. But what I'm going to do is address it as far as agriculture is concerned, is that we're losing our foundation as far as our connection to the equipment, and thus our connection to the land. And today we are relying so much on computers, on data, and we're not becoming mechanics or technicians, or I don't even like the word technician, being a mechanic, or we have to give everybody a title, but being a mechanic or being a driver of the tractor, the combine, the sprayer, whatever it may be, we're becoming operators. You know, and you could look to the machining industry for this, because years ago you had a machinist and he had to set everything on a lathe or a mill or whatever it be, milling machine or whatever it was, and he'd have to tweak it and adjust it, and he became intimate with it. And then we got into CNC machining, where somebody else wrote the program, and that person was basically an operator of the CNC machine. And that's really what's happening today with our equipment, is we're becoming operators. We're almost like becoming, with junk mail, what says occupant? We're becoming an occupant behind the wheel of that combine, behind the wheel of that tractor. We're becoming an occupant under the hood of that pickup truck, under the hood of that sprayer, as far as working on the engine or the mechanical aspects of it. And I want to represent that today, because it is going to stagnate not only the growth of your farm, but your personal growth, and it is also going to stagnate our nation, and that really, really bothers me. So we need to not be occupants underneath the hood or occupants behind the steering wheel or behind the controls. We need to be operators, and we need to be mechanics, and we also need to realize that sometimes the specifications are only a starting point. And that goes, you know, a quick little story is that, as you all know, I work with Successful Farming magazine, and years ago, Successful Farming, I think, is about 150 years old, and E.T. Meredith, which is Meredith Corporation, Meredith Publishing, was given a failing Iowa newspaper as a wedding gift back in the 1800s, and from his uncle. And this is as Dave Mowitz from Successful Farming had told it to me the first time I toured their offices in Des Moines. And he was given this gift, and his uncle said to him, "Do with this what you want." And then what had happened is that E.T. Meredith, the original Mr. Meredith, went around and went from farm to farm to get this, to try to get this newspaper going, this failing newspaper. And then what he had seen very quickly, or experience is probably a better word, is that when he would go to the farmhouse, remember this is the late 1800s, early 1900s, go to the farmhouse, is that usually the farm wife, the woman of the house, was cooking, and she'd say, "Oh, Mr. Meredith, would you like to try a piece of my pumpkin pie? Would you like to try my beef stew?" And the cordiality and the host, the graciousness of being a host, that really is found within the farm family, that you don't really find too much outside the agricultural community today, is that my mother was that way. If somebody came to the house, you had to feed them, regardless, even if they just ate. So, and what happened was that Mr. Meredith came up with the idea, said, "Boy, this apple pie is delicious," or, "Mrs. Jones, this beef stew is fantastic." And he came up with the idea of taking the farm wives' recipes and putting them in the newspaper. And then the newspaper eventually morphed into Successful Farming magazine. And if you look at Successful Farming now, it always has recipes in it, because it is from its roots. And then the Meredith Corporation morphed into one of the largest publishers in the world. And they also own Successful Farming, was their catalyst, the impetus, the seed that started, but they also own a lot of food magazines. And I think they own Rachel Ray magazine and a number of others. But what happened was that he thought out of the box. He just didn't stay with the specification of saying, well, a farm newspaper should be about farming. Is that he thought out of the box, and that morphed into it. But what I'm trying to do is going to try to bring this all together. And how does this relate to the different topics that I have discussed so far with you? Looks like I'm leading you down a wild goose chase here, but I'm not. The idea of the specification not being only being the starting point, and the idea of us losing connection with our machinery by introducing technology, all comes together. Because when I taught fuel injection, I was teaching the students, well, it wasn't, they were students in a sense, but they were business owners, all right, that were going to go into this industry. I was teaching them and say there's a difference between a chef and a cook. Now, my mother had no fun. I know everybody's mother was a wonderful cook, so don't not take anything away from that. But my mother, truthfully, was a wonderful, wonderful cook, a wonderful baker, and like most farm mothers were, and she never used a recipe. She would use the recipe as a starting point, and a cook goes by the recipe. You go into a diner, or you go into some sort of franchise, you go to Denny's or whatever, they have a certain procedure to make the eggs Benedict. My friend Gene always eats that when we go out. But anyway, I've never had it. But that's a cook. A cook follows the recipe. A chef uses the recipe as a starting point and then tweaks it along the way, because the chef will know that maybe this doesn't taste as good today, or this is a little bit too strong, or I got to add a little bit more water, or the barometer is different, what have you, and the chef tweaks it along the way. And if you look at what we're doing today in agriculture, as far as planting is concerned, and fertility, is that the big, you know, the big buzzwords today is variable rate everything. Why are we putting the same amount of N down over here if we don't need that much N? Are we, you know, are we also having planters set up that have two or three different hybrids? We may put a racehorse hybrid here and now a better part of the ground in the field, and we'll put a workhorse in the other end of the field, or part of the field where it does, it's not as, the soil is not as fertile, or maybe it's has some compaction or what have you. All right, so we're looking to variable rate things, variable rate seeding rates, fertility, changing hybrids, and we need to do that. But we could only variable rate things when we have an understanding. So what I'm going to try to do, and hopefully I'm successful, I'm going to try to bring this all together. And what I'm going to discuss first is the need to have an understanding with machinery. Now, a few weeks back, I was honored to be on the Moving Iron podcast by Casey Seymour, which is part of the Global Ag Network. And at the end of that show, when I was having a casual conversation with him, is that he asked me, what do you think a young person today that's coming in the industry could do? And he works in a dealership, I believe a John Deere dealership, as a general manager, or sales manager. Forgive me if I'm wrong, Casey. But I know that he has some capacity in a John Deere dealership in Nebraska, outside of Scott's Bluff. And I gave him an answer. But I was not satisfied with my answer as I was giving it, and I was not satisfied, certainly not satisfied with my answer I gave him retrospectively. I think I gave him a couple of the bullet points that I was trying to convey, and I believe that he wanted to me just give him a bullet point answer, but it's really more of a story, like everything in my life. And the thing is that what we're missing today is that we're relying 100% on technology, and we are taking them, maybe not people so much, you know, middle-aged like I am or some of my audiences, but if you get the younger people that are coming up on your farm, they're going to need to be able to have the basics, and we cannot forget about the basics of mechanics, the basics of machinery, the basics of an engine operation, the basic of hydraulics on this, how a sprayer works or a combine works or what have you. And what we're doing is we're bypassing all of that, and we're going right to a monitor, we're going right to a data acquisition system, we're going to a satellite. And the truth be known is that we're actually doing that younger person an injustice. And and we're doing ourselves an injustice, and ultimately the industry and the country is going to pay the price for that. So for instance, let's say that we're in wheat harvest now. So let's say, God forbid, I hope you don't have it, but let's say that you have a lot of Don in your wheat and you have a fusarium. So now somebody combines today, I'm only using this as an example, somebody combines today have presets for the harvest settings, and you press a button and you put this guy behind the wheel and he's able to drive the combine, and God knows at what particular level even he's driving it, all right? So now an experienced operator, right, would say that this wheat is loaded with a lot of Dawn, all right, and what you would probably do is have the fan speed set up, because as we all know, I'm preaching to the choir, the fusarium infected kernel will be shrunken and will have less density, so a higher fan speed will be self-cleaning to a certain extent and take and blow the fusarium corn out of the back of corn wheat out of the back of I'm a corn farmer so I keep going to corn out of the back of the combine. And then what will be in the hopper will be clean and good, and we can market that, all right? So an experienced operator, if he understands all of this, might choose to run the fan speed higher, okay? But if you do a preset, it very conceivably could see the kernels that were blowing out that are infected, it could see that as grain loss and want to cut the fan speed back. So this gets back to the whole thing, and I've done a show before about autonomy, and I did a show a couple of weeks ago, the first ever road test podcast of a F-150 Limited, and using another example of that is that with that F-150, it had that Ford, I forgot what they call it, co-pilot 360, and I was coming back from the mill in Maryland, where I get my agro liquid fertilizer, and I even said in that podcast there was a dead deer on the side of the road, and there were we call them turkey buzzards, I think they're really turkey vultures, but anyway, we call them buzzards here in New Jersey. They were eating the deer, and I wasn't going to disturb them, so I wanted to move over, and now the steering wheel's tugging at me, so this computer is telling me that I'm going out of my lane because I'm an experienced driver. I'm not going to go 6 inches away from the poor buzzard and either kill him or run him over or maim him or what have you. So it gets back to the specifications. The idea is that we need to have a combination of specifications and knowledge. And the more we computerize things, the more that we put electronics in it, we put sensors in it, we are starting to lose that. So that is what we are going to discuss today. And I'm going to try to hopefully make it have it some level of continuity for you so you could see that. Now, we spoke about the combine and settings, but I'll give you another example. Many years ago, I met a gentleman, Chip Minnick, and Chip was older than I am. I haven't seen him for a number of years, and so hopefully, God willing, he's still alive and doing well. And he was I'll talk in the past tense because I don't know where he's working today. I'm sure he's still there. He was an engineer with Roush. Not Roush Racing, but the Roush Engineering Department of Roush Racing in Michigan. And Chip and his brother were ground up. They're both engineers. Chip and his brothers were ground up engineers coming from the ground up. They were street racers down in the Philadelphia area, down outside. I think they did live in Pennsylvania, not in South Jersey, but there's a big drag racing scene that used to be down there, and they were street racers. He and his brother were street racers that went there. They were going to college and studying engineering, and because of this, Chip and his brother had the hands-on experience of knowing how to weld, knowing how to set a camshaft, to file piston rings and what have you. And then he went to school and got the mathematics and the science behind it and became a valuable asset in the industry. And his brother went on and took a slightly different path and actually became a engineer and scientist at NASA, as far as the missile, the NASA's space program is concerned. So here you have these guys, and they went on and they took the practical experience, the practical knowledge that could be never learned in school, and then applied that along with the foundation of mathematics and science from the classroom. It's the bacon and eggs. You need it together. If you just have one or the other, you're not going to be truly successful. And if you look at the high yield farmers, and I don't care what crop it is, what they're basically doing is they're applying the empirical, and which is the practical knowledge, what they found, and they're applying the theory of how a plant grows, right? And they're putting them together, and then that's what you do in engineering. You'll take something and say, well, the math tells me this, and then you go out there and say, well, either my math is wrong, my data is wrong, or I can't have the results that I'm coming up with. So you need to constantly go back and forth, and you constantly need to tweak and go back and forth. But what we're doing is that relying on specifications and relying on presets and electronics and computers. You have to remember, if you have, let's say, going back to the combine scenario, if you have a preset in that combine, a harvest preset to set everything right, somebody wrote that code. That didn't come from God, right? Somebody wrote that code. So it's A, B, C, or whatever it is. And they wrote that code and said, okay, from their experience based upon these conditions, then we should have these settings in the combine like this. But those are only going to be a starting point. And what does something like a combine preset do for your farm? Or a CNC machine, it allows you to have an operator that does not have the same skill level. And you know, this goes back also to the show I did a month or two ago about autonomy, is that, you know, you can't take an autonomous tractor, autonomous sprayer, autonomous plant, or whatever it is, and have the same results as a truly skilled operator. But you could have the same results as someone, to a certain extent, all right, same results as an operator with a preset. So as I said, we are becoming occupants under the hood, we're becoming occupants in the cab, we're becoming occupants at the toolbox, we're occupying that space, we're not truly owning that space. And that is something that needs to change, because just like the high yield farmer, if he went and said, okay, so much N, P, and K, and that's basically it, and you went out there, sometimes you got a good crop, sometimes you have a bad crop, and sometimes it's something in the middle, that you're not gonna move the needle, and nobody's gonna move the needle by just falling in line. So that is what we are going to discuss today. So how do we combat this? We combat this by going back to the basics. You know, years ago, and I'll use an engineering discipline, but it could be applied to so many different fields. Years ago, when you studied engineering, you also had to work out in the field, and you had to have practical application, you had to have practical experience. And the thing is that somebody recently told me, they went to an SAE, which is Society of Automotive Engineering conference in Michigan, and they were discussing something, and they had a panel discussion, and it was a bunch of young engineers there. I don't know what the exact dynamics were, but somebody said, well, why don't we just put a Zerk fitting on it so we could grease it? And then a number of the young guys, and these are degreed engineers, said, what is a Zerk fitting? So what that proves to me is that guy never worked on a 72 Plymouth in his life, and he's going to design cars, or a 68 Ford, or built a motor, or worked on a farm and greased a joint. All right, so he did not know what a Zerk fitting was. And so how do we combat this? Well, we combat this, first of all, if we want to combat it with a younger person that is on our farm, or we're bringing up into our business, or if you're, I know there's a lot of future Farmers of America instructors that listen to the show, we need to go backwards. We need to teach the people how a carburetor works. We need to teach the people how an injection pump works. You don't need to be 100% expert on it, but you need to understand how it works, because when I taught electronic fuel injection, the best fuel injection guys were the best carburetor guys, because the engine has no idea of how it is being fueled. So we need to be able to go back, and we need to be able to teach that and expose those younger people to the different elements of machinery and different elements of farming. We need to be able to show them when the time is right, and like I said, you don't have to make a career out of that. When the time is right, we need to be able to show them what the way we used to do it, what the pitfalls were, and what the pitfalls and advantages of the way we are doing it today. Because everything is a double-sided sword. Then nothing is just all positive. Yes, we have wonderful controls and farm equipment, say tractors and monitors and what have you. All right, but the pitfall of it is that there's an overcomplication that an old open platform of tractor of any color, right, with a mechanical diesel engine did not have. All right, and we got a good suntan back then. We didn't have to go to the beach. So that is what we need to focus on. And as a young person coming up in this field or on your farm, you know, you have an old grain truck there. You have something. It could be a piece of junk. You know, get that to run right. Show the person how to adjust the valves. Show the person how to adjust the carburetor. Take the carburetor apart. Explain to them what a float level is. Explain to them what the float setting is, what the idle mixture screw is. But the thing basically is that if you don't understand the float level and the need to have a float level in the carburetor, you're not going to grasp what the rail pressure needs to be on the EFI system and why it's there. Because those dynamics, though different, they are the same. So we need to go backwards and start with that. As far as farming is concerned, how can we explain to a young person about the benefits of no-till if they never saw a mold board plow? Now, I'm not saying you got to go plow up 1,000 acres, all right? But if you have an old mold board plow, get it out and show, you know, and look at what was happening, and then show them how the soil was being turned, how it was being oxygenated, how the mold board was actually compacting the soil underneath, and it looked very nice and fluffy and turned on the top, but 6 or 8 inches under, you were causing a plow pan or hard pan, whatever term you want to use. So we need to do that, because then we could take them and move them into it, because today's society, and specifically with machinery, and that's what I'm all about, the pitfall is that there is no understanding. And that's what's happening in our country with our history also. They're trying to erase our history, all right? There's no understanding of the sacrifices that were made in the past and no acknowledgement of it. People think that they woke, you know, you woke up and all of a sudden there were these cities, there was these highways, that we had freedom, we had a constitution, we all of these things, they just take it for granted because it's in front of them. And we need to move forward, but we also need to look at the past. And as far as machinery is concerned, if you look at an engine, if it's a Tier 4 diesel, the most modern Tier 4 diesel, it's basically running on the same functions and the same dynamics as Rudolf Diesel did back in the 1800s when he developed it. Right, so there is still those same dynamics, how we are bringing the fuel there, how we're controlling things, different machining procedures, but the same core. Just like you put a seed in the ground, you put a corn seed in the ground, the dynamics of the way that seed, you know, germinates and emerges and comes up out of the ground is the same as it was when the pilgrims came here. That dynamics has not changed. And what we're doing is that with machinery and with mechanical things, we're forgetting all about that, and we're giving the guy a laptop computer. Here, the code says this. No code, so there's nothing wrong. I mean, I get so many letters from people in the agricultural industry and in the automotive industry, because I have a foot in each camp. Well, the engine isn't running, it's stalling, but there's no code, so I guess there's nothing wrong. Well, that's like saying, well, your crop is dying in the field, but I guess there's nothing wrong. That's just the way it is, right? They just die, I guess. They turn purple when they die, all right? Or they turn yellow when they die. So we need to remove that. We cannot rely 100% on technology. Just like I've always said, and I'm not bragging by no means, but I like to say, it's probably a humbler way of me saying it, the same thing happens with the economy. We need to blend patriotism with capitalism. You cannot just keep going along as a businessman chasing the lowest price and making everything in China because you could make 5 cents more. We need to blend patriotism with capitalism, and we need to be able to blend the past with the future and use data acquisition, use computers, use scanners, use monitors, what have you, as a tool, not as the gospel, and just throw our hands up and say the computer says this, and not even knowing what the heck it is talking about. So now that I went through that sermon, let's get halfway into the show, right? Let's talk about specifications. And as I was saying in the beginning, that, you know, a cook and a chef, the difference, right? We have to understand that when we're working, and I'm going to be talking for the most part about engines today, but this could be conveyed into anything. It could be transferred into the planter settings. It could be transferred into sprayer settings. It could be transferred into welding, all right? A good welder, right? He's not going to just have one temperature, everything set. He's going to be able to, you know, he's going to fine-tune it to see the way the metal works, the way it's spitting, what his weld penetration is, it's his discoloring, how the rod feels, what have you. So this is going to be, but I'm going to focus today on engines. And what's going to happen is that, why is the specification only a starting point? The specification is only a starting point because on an engine, like any other piece of machinery, there are manufacturing tolerances, there is wear, there are other things that go on and affect it. And if you were to look at the specification is basically an ideal. So let's talk about a spark plug gap. Now, and you have to be able to know, like Kenny Rogers used to say in that song, you have to know when to hold them and to fold them. All right, I think the song was The Gambler from about 30 years ago, or maybe 40 years ago, right? Who knows? But anyway, so let's talk about a spark plug gap. So let's say that you have a small engine on a sea tender, all right, whatever, small, whatever, Briggs and Stratton type, Tecumseh type, Honda type of engine, right? And the specification on the spark plug is 35 thousandths. We'll use easy arithmetic, all right, 35 thousandths. So that 35 thousandths specification is a gap that is created between the central electrode and the side electrode, and is what is called the ionization gap. That is going to be the gap that the spark has to jump, and the spark will jump from the central electrode to the side electrode unless you have the coil hooked up backwards, the positive and negative leads on the coil, reverse polarity, right? And what that is designed to do is give a large enough ionization window that the coil, the ignition coil, will have enough capacity, because the ignition coil is like a bank account. You can only put in, take out what you put in, enough capacity to be able to keep that, to light that spark plug, light that arc, and keep it arcing for as many degrees of rotation of the crankshaft as possible, all right? Now, if you do not have if the gap is too wide, then the coil cannot jump, that doesn't have enough potential energy to jump that gap, and the spark goes right to ground on the easiest path and doesn't cause an ionization window to start the combustion process, all right? If the spark plug gap is too low, too close, then what will happen is that there's not enough of a window of opportunity. It's like a planting window, that you have enough fuel and air mixed together, the homogenized mixture, to be able to create ignition and start a flame front, a flame burning in that cylinder. So you don't have enough of a window, and you don't have enough potential energy, because there's not enough work, not enough electrical energy to ignite, or trying to wet, like light wet wood with a match. Alrighty? So this gap is designed to create a balance between the coil saturation, the need, the creating an optimization window for the ionization voltage, and to be able to keep the spark arcing for as much time as possible. And for those of us that are a little bit older like me, and they were involved with engines and cars, and even as a kid, you'll know that back in the late mid-70s when electronic ignition came out, specifically with GM, they had 80,000 gap spark plugs. And why they have 80,000 gap spark plugs is because they had what was called HEI, that is a brand name, Delco HEI. People use it for generically like Kleenex or Jeep, for Kleenex for tissue, or Jeep for a four-wheel drive, but high energy ignition was a registered brand name of Delco Electronics, Delco division of General Motors, AC Delco. And they had a very strong ignition system, and at that particular point, the industry was going to leaner air-fuel ratios for emissions, and they wanted to provide a larger ionization window, for the simple reason being is that the fuel and air molecules were further apart, and because it was a leaner mixture to reduce emissions and give better fuel economy. So by opening up that gap to 80,000s, and having an ignition system that could bridge that gap, is that we were able to, the industry was able to accomplish that. If you took an old breaker point system a year before, HEI came out in GM for 1975, and you had a breaker point system, you opened up the gap to 80,000s, that spark plug is not firing. That engine is not going to start because it didn't have enough oats to pull. It's like trying to pull a big piece of a big air seater with a 50 horsepower tractor. It's not doing it. It's not moving it. All right. So we have this gap. All right. So now we have this gap of 35,000s in this small motor, small engine. So that's our starting point. Now let's say that you, whatever the duty cycle is of this, let's say it's a very short duty cycle, and this engine starts to, after on the C10, it starts to foul the spark plug. And it's fouling the spark plug, not because it's blowing oil, but because it has short run times and it's not able to clean itself off. So then as a tuner, so you could say to yourself, okay, fine, thinking out of the box, the specifications, a starting point, what I'm going to do is I am going to open up that gap from 35,000s, and I'm going to use easy numbers, to 40,000s. And because I only run this motor for a short period of time. Now, by opening up that gap to 40,000s, all right, you're going to try that, all right, and you're going to say, well, hopefully I have enough coil saturation that I could jump it at 40,000s, all right, and what it will do is will create, we're going to use the term a hotter spark, meaning that there's going to require more amperage from the coil and a higher voltage to jump that gap, and that higher amperage and voltage has the potential to keep that spark plug clean for longer. So you may have this seed tender, using that example, right? You got a beautiful unreferred seed tender, and you're loading soybeans with it, what have you, and you have this short duty cycle because it's a real big tender. You're filling up the planter real quickly, and you say, man, after a while of this engine is hard starting, it starts to misfire, it starts to what have you, is because it can't, and you pull the plug out, and the plug is kind of dirty. It's not clean. It's not burning cleanly. Then what you could do is open up that gap so you're tweaking it. So at that particular point, the specification is just a starting point, okay? The other thing you could say was, okay, I have this, and go staying on the spark plug theme, I have this UTV, and I use it to run to the barn to check the cows, and you're at the dairy operation, and then you use it to run over here, and you have a lot of short cycles, you have a lot of cold starts on it, you move running it for 2 or 3 minutes, and it wants to foul the spark plug, right, or it starts to run raggy, and you end up putting plugs in it very often because of that. Right, you find out that the plugs are starting to go away. Well, on an application like that, you may go into town and look in the parts book and say, I need to have a hotter spark plug. The same dimension, but a hotter spark plug, which would be altering the cone, the insulator cone length, a hotter spark plug. So this spark plug runs hotter, and is less prone to fouling. So then again, the specification for the heat range has needs to be tweaked for your operation. So now let's say you did this and you put the hottest spark plug in, you go one heat range hotter, and now you find that this engine is much more forgiving and runs better for the short duty cycles. Now what's happening is your operation is changing, and I'm only using this as an example because it's a visual, not a visual, but it could make sense, is that now the operation, and you're going to be running this engine for a long time. You're going to be, you could be running it up and down the road, 10,000 acres away, whatever. And now you find that when you run it for a long time, it starts to misfire. Well, that's because that spark plug now is too hot for that condition. So then you would go back to the starting point of the specification of for the heat range or for the gap, because that is an all-around middle-of-the-road setting or heat range or temperature. You know, when you are working on things, you need to be able to become in harmony or get in harmony with them. So if you're adjusting a carburetor on something, you may find that it likes to be slightly richer or slightly leaner, or instead of idling, it's the specification is 650 RPM, this one may like to idle smoother at 635 RPM or 675 RPM. If you have to go down to 500 or up to 1,000, then obviously something else is wrong and you need to look there. But you have to be able to tweak it. So it's just like going into the field and tweaking your planter for the soil conditions that are in that part of the field. If you have and in that particular point, that is where, you know, electronic controls and feedback systems like a 2020 seed sense or something like that, you know, or delta downforce, throwing different terms around, comes into play and has value. But that delta downforce system, that 2020 seed sense or whatever brand you have or you're working with, does not truly understand soil conditions. You need to tell it to a certain extent what you want. You need to be able to say, hey, with this soil condition, this dampness of the soil, this is the down pressure I want. It can accomplish it for you, and I can keep it constant across that part of the field, but you still need to understand. So if we are relying 100% on specifications, if we're relying 100% on presets, we are going with someone else's recipe. And the only way that you will be able to actually determine this and become intimate with it is by working over many years and working with a mechanical system and then moving into a more advanced system. If you have no foundation of a mechanical system on an engine, of how a carburetor works or a mechanical injection pump works, then you are going to have a very hard time truly not only fixing and repairing, because you don't have that background fixing or repairing that system, or getting that planter or that engine or that sprayer tuned up to its highest efficiency. And if you look at, you know, I'm a drag racer, but if you look at any types of racing, all right, you'll take a drag guy and with a, you know, now I'm not talking about a 14 second street car, but you'll look at anything that has some horsepower in it. They're going to tune for the track condition, they're going to tune for the barometer. Sometimes you want to take power out because, say, if the track is greasy, then you want to take some power out because you have too much power in too soon, all right? You're going to play with the clutch setting where the clutch engages, and that's what wins races. And on the farm shop, what's going to win races is you be able to have an understanding of what that piece of equipment needs to be set like maybe today or maybe for its whole life and use on your farm. And if you do not have that background, if you do not have that understanding, if you do not have that experience, then it is going to be very hard to almost impossible for you to be able to do that. So now keep in mind also that when you're tweaking something, adjusting something, and this doesn't apply, it's not a blanket statement for everything, because, you know, and I've often said, you know, in agriculture, we do test plots, and we do replication. All right. In engineering, we call it ABA testing. So let's say, arguably, getting back to the spark plug gap on a short duty cycle engine. All right, on the C tender. So the specification is 35,000s. You set it at 40,000s. The engine runs fine, and you find out that it keeps the plug cleaner. Well, that's great. We don't need to go any further. But now, you may sometimes want to go 35,000s, 40,000s, back to 35,000s, which is ABA. I'm not saying you're doing this in 5 minutes, all right, but you're getting to see, geez, you know, I have it at 40,000s and it's a little bit harder to start, so let me go back to 35,000s and see. Well, it's easier to start now, but I'm dirtying up the plug, so maybe I'll end up going 37 or 38,000s. So you need to do ABA testing, which would be doing the same thing, a field trial on your farm. You're putting a foliar on this row, you're not putting a foliar on this row, you're putting a foliar on the next row. So the thing basically, you could see truly and quantify and qualify, there may not be a number attached to it, qualify and quantify what the effect of this is. But you know, and you know, same thing is going to happen, you know, like with tire pressures. I mean, yes, there are charts for tire pressures, and those are a specification, but you may find that you want to tweak that a pound or two, and or what have you. And, you know, this, you know, I don't want to give you the impression that this is overbearing, but it's not. But it really comes into being in harmony with what you are working with and what you are doing. And the person who just sticks with the one specification and does nothing more and never varies it is never going to have sterling results, and they're never going to move forward in their operation. Right, you know, in farming we have the old thing, we always said it this way. I mean, we always did it this way, so we don't change anything like that. And you know, and I want also for you to say is that if you have, for you to say, I'm getting all excited, I'm talking stupid, but what I want to explain to you, or represent to you, is not explain, is that if you have a younger generation coming up on the farm, it's very important for you to establish the foundation of mechanical procedure and how mechanical things worked years ago, and then let that person use that as a foundation into modern ways of accomplishing the same thing. And also for you, you're never too old to learn, and you can't keep a closed mind to things and say, well, I'm not gonna get interested in this TF4 stuff or what have you, or I'm not gonna get interested in these computers or these monitors. We used to just get off the tractor. If it looked good, we were happy. All right. You know, and I'm not saying to go to that level. What I'm saying is that, you know, you can't take a calculus class if you don't know what 1 + 1 is. You can't take a physics class. All right, you can't read a history book if you don't know how to read. And what I'm afraid of is that we are relying so much on computer code or electronics that somebody else has written, or making decisions on our farm shop and ultimately in our farm operation from somebody else's data, and not using it and tweaking it for ourselves. And you know, this year Plant 19 is a perfect example. And you know, I'm probably the least experienced farmer from everyone who's listening to this show, but what I've learned over the years, and why, and I'm just using it as an example, all right, and yet to be seen whether my idea was right or wrong, but the wetness that we had in the soil and my soil structure, I was afraid to go into the field with my field cultivator because I thought I would fluff up the top, I would dry that out, I would warm it up, granted, but I would compact the soil underneath those tines of that field cultivator, or those shovels, I should say. And I would fight that compaction. So I decided to do true no-till this year on my corn, as I've said in the past. Now, 3 or 4 years ago, I would never have thought that way, because I would have been a victim. I would have been just as guilty of what I'm trying to tell you what to do. I was a specification man, and then this is what we need to do, and to hell with the damn wetness, to hell with everything, this is what we need to do. and I would have wrecked or compacted my soil structure underneath. So I chose to make that decision, and a lot of guys chose to make different decisions to that this year with plant 19 based upon what they needed to do to get the seed in the ground. Some guys said, well, I got to get this soil drier, I got to warm it up a little bit, and I have no choice to do tillage. And God willing, they don't have many repercussions after that. But now that we're starting to get hot and dry, as we all know, is that we're going to lose that top soil moisture. If those roots are hitting a hard pan, then this crop, be it corn, what have you, is going to be very, very sensitive to a lack of rain. So those are decisions that you make based upon experience and knowledge and education of how a plant grows. If you're working on a piece of machinery and you say, well, geez, you know, this, I've had engines over the years, and I'm talking about engines in cars or pickup trucks, that you set them at the specification of 650 RPM special EFI engines, the person would come to a traffic light in town and 5 times out of 10 the engine would stall, because something called an idle air control motor wasn't able to track fast enough to compensate for that throttle being closed. Was it a combination of, it was probably a combination of the way that torque converter was made. It wasn't made badly. All right, the torque converter was made, the rolling resistance of the vehicle, and the response of that idle air control motor. There was nothing physically wrong, but we call that a stack up of tolerances. And I fixed many, many, many engines over the years by just saying, well, it doesn't like it at 650, let's set it at 675, and let's make our throttle position sensor setting at 675 RPM versus 650, and that vehicle would go out and would never stall again, and would have no problem whatsoever. So the thing is that is the idea of being able to understand that, and those, I'm using those particular vehicles as an example, they would go back to the dealer 10 times for stalling. They would change the computer, they would change the idle air control motor, they would change the throttle body, they would change a whole bunch of stuff at customer dissatisfaction. The car would have $10,000 worth, well, I'm exaggerating, $2,000 worth of parts in it, and it would still be stalling, and it was an eighth of a turn on the throttle, actually it's called a minimum air rate screw, and a tweak of the throttle position sensor voltage, and the car ran for 100,000 miles and never stalled again. So please, 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 when you are looking at anything on your farm, and I'm going to close here now, when I'm looking at anything, when you're looking at anything on your farm, realize that you need to be, you need to be the conductor of the orchestra. Use the specification. I'm not saying throw the specification out. Use the specification as a starting point. If it's performance of the planter, the engine, the sprayer, what have you, going to calibrate your sprayer, all right? You may, you'll be running 45 pounds, but you may have that spray tip may give you better atomization and a better pattern at 43 pounds or 46 pounds. If you have to go to 70 pounds or 50 pounds, well, that's an issue. But you need to tweak that and look at that. All right, so please always think in your mind, and so many times I will try to, or I will get involved with somebody either the telephone or through the internet, email, what have you, and I say, that's set at spec, it's at spec, it's at spec, and it's at spec. Well, obviously it doesn't like the spec, all right? And just like you will find in your, so you need to understand that you need to tweak that. And the other thing that you need to understand is that if you're bringing up another generation of people on your farm, is that please share the old ways of doing things, all right? I mean, you don't have to go back to a mule and a plow, but share the old way of doing things so that they can have continuity in their education and in their experience of life. And you know, the fact of the matter is that if you have this continuity, then everything will make sense. What we're basically doing in education today, and specifically on the farm, everybody's talking high tech, drones, this and that. And you know, I get annoyed with it for the simple reason being is because they're showing the guy a drone, right? Let's get that drone is a wonderful tool to go out and scout the field. Satellite imaging, that's great. But the guy doesn't know what it's like to go in the field and dig up a corn plant, or recognize what a visual crop deficiency looks like, or what what a club route looks like, what have you, because they're all going to go with a drone and they're going to sit there on the iPhone and run the drone. The drone is a tool. The scanner is a tool. All right, the voltmeter is a tool. All right, everything is a tool. We need to understand trouble codes in an engine management system are a tool. They're a tool in your toolbox. You don't, if you rely 100% on that, your farm is not growing, your machinery is not running the best it can, and you're going to have more downtime. So please, you know, get that. If you have a young person coming into the farm, let them get that old grain truck running. Let them get that old lawnmower engine running, that old irrigation pump. Let them learn that and have exposure to it, because otherwise, in closing, what we're basically doing is we're taking either ourselves, all right, ourselves. This doesn't have to just be youth. All right, ourselves, and we're coming into the movie half, more than 60% into the movie. We don't know who the players are. We don't know who's the good guy. We don't know who the bad guy. And how could we enjoy a movie, or how could we be successful in life if we're coming into it 50 to 60% in? All right, and we don't have any exposure to what is going on or how we got from here to there. And that is what the message of this show is today. And hopefully, God willing, that I didn't bore you with this or lecture you too much. But if you think about it, that's really what it is all about. And I want to tell you one other thing, is that August 13th and 14th, St. John's, Michigan, the Agro Expo. And that is what the Agro Expo is about. It is about learning. It is about foundation. It is not going all the way back to hand planting corn. All right. What it's basically doing is it's taking this foundation, and it's an educational event. And I'm very excited about being there and going there and learning. And they have, and it's such an eclectic event, and you could go there and you could choose, do you want to learn about succession planning, estate planning? Do you want to learn how to optimize crop insurance for your farm? Do you want to learn about how to set your sprayer properly? Do you want to learn about different fertility? The problem being is that there's so much going on there, and it's such a powerful educational tool, is that you almost need to identify a different person to attend a different seminar or a different talk or a different part of the event. But it is about education, and I've been saying this to you for weeks now, because education is the key. Education is never lost, and education will allow you to actually apply logic and common sense and protocol to things, to uncharted areas that your farm has never sailed to before. And that is what is going to help you not only be profitable in the hard times, and times are always hard, right? Either the weather is against us, the markets are against us, the equipment is against us, something is always against us, right? And that's life. Life is always happening. But through education, the experienced driver on the road, when he goes into a skid 95% of the time, or I'll say the majority of the time, he doesn't go over the ditch into the ditch because he has experience of learning how to get out of that skid. But you have to go into those skids previously to learn how to get out of it. And that is what the Agro Expo, it's about learning. It's about, you may pick up something today that you at the expo that you may not apply for 2 years. It's back in your mind. Or you may come home and apply it the next day in the farm. And that's why I want you to be there. So it is in St. John's, Michigan. It's a great event. It's free. If you go on the website, The Agro Expo, and if you do attend, which I hope that you do, and you run into me, please, please say hello. And I would love to shake your hand and learn about your farm and your family and your operation and about your equipment. I'd love to learn everything about you, since this is a one-way conversation. I'm talking to you and you're not talking back to me. All right, so I'm hogging the microphone here. But now it's time for our special delivery. And special delivery is brought to us by Firestone Ag, a company founded by Harvey Firestone, a fourth-generation farmer from Columbiana, Ohio. Harvey dreamed of putting rubber tires on farm tractors, and his innovative mindset is the core of Firestone Ag today and lives on with their 23-degree tread bar, their AD2 technology, that's the IF and VF tires, all right, and also the Firestone of tracks. You know, tracks are not tracks. Yes, they'll all move the machine just like a tire is round, black, and hard, but there are differences. And if you're running a track machine and it's time to consider some new tracks pretty soon, then do yourself a favor and check out what Firestone has to offer. Remember, the soil is the lifeblood of your farm. Trust it only to Firestone. You know, I'm going to just give you a generic special delivery, because over the past couple of weeks I've gotten some letters, and I'm not going to, so this is not directly a response to anyone, but it's a collective response. And I've had letters from a TC29 New Holland farm tractor, some smaller gasoline engines, you know, utility engines, I call them Briggs and Stratton type, Tecumseh type air-cooled engines, and I think a older something, I forgot what it was, I'm sorry. I get letters from car magazines and from farming and from successful farming and through my website, so sometimes they all get mixed up in my head. But the thing basically is that the common denominator with all of these engines, or I think it was a chainsaw, that's what it was, a chainsaw. A common denominator with all of these engines is that they start and they run fine. Then at one particular point they're running, and they either start to, the TC29 New Holland tractor start to act like it was running out of fuel, and some of the other people that contacted me, they would shut the engine off, it would be hard starting. All right, so this is, so what was interesting about this, they were both diesel, which is a mechanical injection pump, and carbureted small engines. And so there are two different types of fuels, two different combustion theories, compression ignition versus spark ignition, two different mechanical injection pump, a carburetor, everything was completely different. But the common denominator in is that they had an issue. And what I want to talk about today is that keep in mind that the fuel tank, be it whatever it is, gas, diesel, small engine, large engine, needs to have a vent that allows it to breathe. And what I am suggesting to you is when you get an oddball problem like that, that seems to be heat related, or the engine gets fueled and you go to start it again and it doesn't want to start, or it has a hard time running, or is acting like it's stalling and surging, or a combination of the above, then what you need to do is take the cap off, or make the fuel cap, either take it off or let it be loose, and then try to run the engine. Now what basically happens is that if you end up getting a plugged vent on a cap, is that specifically with a hot engine, that the pressure will build up in there and the cap will not vent properly, or it could actually create a vacuum in there depending upon how the vent has failed and the way the fuel delivery is, and the system will starve for fuel and it will not bring fuel into the injection pump or the carburetor. So keep that in mind. So this person who contacted me with this TC29 New Holland was having a lot of issues. So I said to him, I gave him a bunch of possibilities, and I said, but let's pick the low-hanging fruit first. I said, why don't you loosen up the fuel cap and go from there and see what happens. And he did that, and he contacted me, and he says he thinks that the problem is fixed, that he needs a new fuel cap. This is very, very common with smaller engines, on a seed tender, on a pressure washer, on a log splitter, on a small transfer pump, is that they end up having a vent problem in the fuel cap. So take that cap off or leave it loose and see what happens. But keep in mind that if you aerated that system, you're not going to take the cap off and pull a rope and it's going to start and run. You're going to have a problem getting it started until the system primes and gets a solid flow of fuel in. And I did a show a week or two back about entrained air. So keep that in mind. But then you could do ABA testing. You could get it to run. It runs well. Put the cap back on. Duplicate those same conditions and then see what happens. But keep in mind that lots of times that you will have a vent problem, and this could be in a combine, a vent problem through the cap or actually however the fuel tank is vented. It just doesn't necessarily need to be the cap. But by opening up that cap, you're opening up a large area and you're allowing atmospheric pressure and that fuel tank to breathe. And it is a very, very valid diagnostic routine. And you'll be surprised how many obscure problems you will fix by doing that. So listen, thank you so much. I lectured you hard today. I came at you in all different directions. I apologize. I hope I was able to make sense to you. But I want you, the American farmer and rancher, and my beloved America to be successful. And we cannot be successful in anything we do by coming into the movie halfway through. We need to go back and apply the basics and learn the basics. So you have a blessed day, and thank you so much for listening.